Blog Talk Radio.
Take a licking. There is someone waiting who will hurry up and rescue you. Just call for Super Chicken.
Welcome to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer, brought to you by Manpro, providing the best quality products that your animals deserve at a value you can appreciate. Manpro, nurturing life. My name is Andy Schneider, but most know me as the Chicken Whisperer. My co-host is poultry advocate and author of City Chicks, Chicken Tractor, and other great titles, Pat Foreman. Today is Thursday, December 9th, and I'd like to thank all of you for tuning in this afternoon on Blog Talk Radio. This is a live radio show that is broadcast around the world. This radio show is all about keeping backyard poultry, show poultry, and living a self-sufficient lifestyle. You can follow the Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer radio show 24 hours a day at our website, chickenwhisperer.com. That's chickenwhisperer.com. From there, you can follow us on Twitter, become a fan on Facebook, visit our blog, sign up for our monthly e-newsletter, The Chicken Scratch, and get all kinds of great Chicken Whisperer gear. If you're listening live today on Blog Talk Radio, I invite you to join us right now in the live chicken chat room. You can talk with other backyard poultry with the Chicken Whisperer fans and other chicken owners around the country. You can also ask any questions you may have for our special guests, and we have them on. All you have to do is click on the chat now button at our homepage there at Blog Talk Radio. Take a moment to register. That will get you your own unique fun and creative screen name. Then you can come on in and sit us down, have a great time, meet some new friends, and talk all about backyard poultry, show poultry, and living a self-sufficient lifestyle. I would also like to invite the Marcus Radio show as a favorite and request to be on our friends list while you're there at Blog Talk Radio. We hope you'll take a moment to do this today. And if you don't want to thank you all for tuning in, Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer, brought to you by Manpro.
Manpro is committed to providing the best quality products that your animals deserve at a value you can appreciate. No matter the animal, no matter the product, you can be certain that Manpro cares as much about the well-being of your flock as you do. So try one of the many poultry products offered at a retailer near you. Manpro, nurturing life.
Designed for starting and growing game birds and improved digestion. So next time you're starting some new birds, try Manpro's Game Bird Show.
Mount Healthy Hatcheries has been a hatching tradition for over 80 years. Home of the healthiest chicks, Mount Healthy Hatcheries offers a wide selection of bantams, turkeys, guineas, ducks, pheasants, and of course, meat birds and layers. Order online at mounthealthy.com, that's mthealthy.com, or give them a call at 1-800-451-5603. Don't forget to ask about their free bonus chicks offer. Mount Healthy Hatcheries, home of the healthiest chicks.
You have the chickens, the coop, and the run, but do you have the egg cartons? Don't put your beautiful farm fresh eggs in any old used grocery store egg carton. Impress your friends with your very own custom labeled egg cartons from eggcartons.com. They have a large selection of custom egg cartons, stamps, and labels to choose from. Pick out your new custom egg cartons at eggcartons.com. That's eggcartons.com.
You need an incubator, think Brensea, the incubation specialist. Brensea has been a world-leading manufacturer of incubators for over 30 years. Incubators from 7 to 380 eggs with high-quality electronic and digital controls, including precise humidity control and programmable egg turning, all at surprisingly affordable prices. Visit them online at Brinsea.com. Brinsea spelled B-R-I-N-S-E-A. That's Brinsea.com or call 1-888-667-7009. Enter the coupon code WHISPER at checkout and save 10% on their incubators, brooders, egg handlers, and other incubation accessories. When you need an incubator, think Brinsea, technology you can trust. Hey, it's the Chicken Whisperer, here to tell you that if you have backyard poultry, nothing is more important than making sure your feathered friends are safe from infectious poultry diseases. Learn the simple steps to keep your birds healthy by visiting this website, healthybirds.aphis.usda.gov. That's healthybirds.aphis.usda.gov.
A message from the USDA.
And the mighty bird against prejudice continues his fight for law and order. So when you hear that cry in the sky, you'll know it's Super Chicken.
All righty. Thank you very much for staying with us today on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. It is now time to bring on my wonderful co-host, Poultry Advocate.
Hey, Whisperer, good afternoon here. Boy, I got to warn you again up front. I had a little bit of a binge this morning. I'm not sure what caused me to do it, but there are these little panda all-natural soft licorice in this little box, and it tasted so good. I think I've eaten about half the box. Yes. So now I'm getting off on licorice.
Warning.
Anyway, we need a sound check, Whisperer. I'm having a little trouble hearing you.
I can hear you, Andy? I know before the break we were having some problems. I'm here. Are you there?
Yeah. Am I coming through okay? You sound like you're on maybe Mars, but.
I'll try to switch over to the good line. Let's try to get some folks in the great chat room here to give me a sound check. Give me a second. Testing 1, 2, all these high-tech gadgets we have here. High-tech 1, 2. 7C says you sound good, Pat. Let's see what everybody else says now that we're back on. And it says I'm still breaking up. So what I'll do is...
Yeah, you are for me too a little bit.
Well, I'll tell you what we'll do. We'll go ahead and we'll start, because I know you've got some good news. I posted it on the Facebook page last night. We'll have you go ahead and start some chickens in the news, which I know you want to share with everybody about Marky. And then while you're doing that, I'll go ahead and try to fix the system, because we've got a great show lined up for everybody today. And I'll be back right shortly as soon as I reboot the broadcast switchboard. So we'll have you go ahead and share the great news about Marky, and we will, and I'll be back here shortly.
Okay, great. Well, this is a case in Kensington, Maryland that we've been following for over a year, and this has been ongoing. It's caused amazing stress on the family, but the county of Montgomery filed had an anonymous complaint and filed charges against the Stansel family to get rid of their chickens. And Margie can probably come on tomorrow and talk about it in person. She's got an amazing story to tell. She's been a champion for chickens. She helped Gaithersburg, Maryland. They were going to get booted out, but she got the troops rounded up and was able to get a unanimous vote for chickens up in Gaithersburg, while her own case about her own flock was going on for another 6 months. So anyway, finally yesterday, the court case, which is the third that they've time they've been in court, came up, and the judge ruled that the law was ambiguous, that they could be interpreted different ways, and based upon the ambiguity of the law, he dismissed the case and the charges. So the Stansels are absolutely ecstatic. I've been up to their house. I was at the court case twice as a witness. I even took Oprah Winfrey up. If you folks will remember back just about a year ago, we were hosted by the Montgomery County Courthouse, and Oprah Winfrey was there on my arm. The guards were petting her, the kids were petting her, and the whole issue with this case was, are chickens pets or livestock? And if they're pets, they have one sort of rulings. If they're livestock, it's another. So Oprah was there as a of Brandrew was certainly there to show that they can be pets. So it's what the county will do. They could, of course, rewrite the code to be clearer. It could be for or against. Margie's going to still keep a strong vigilance on it. But until then, they have their flock. They have an absolutely beautiful yard, and their flock blends in with their market garden. She does take some of the food that she grows to the farmer's market, and she's a beautiful artist, has done amazing pieces of art, some of which are even on the cover of the Montgomery County Local Foods Network. I forget exactly the title of that magazine. So this is a big win, and it certainly is a precedent, and it will affect a lot of people in Montgomery County, because there were a lot of family flocks, but people were kind of afraid to come forward, because if the Stancils got the axe, they were worried that they would lose their flocks too. So now we can come out of the coops and into the streets, and certainly proclaim that chickens, at least right now, are absolutely acceptable and legal in Kensington, Maryland. So, Whisper, are you back yet? Okay, he's not back. Let me see if I can pull up. Let me get this link that I can get to. Okay. Well, the other news I've got, which just came out, is that, and this is really exciting, is that Michael McConaughey of Edible Landscapes is going to become a regular on the show. Michael is a walking encyclopedia, quite literally. He knows more about edible landscaping. He's been doing it for about 25 years. His place is up near Afton, Virginia. And if you want to know anything about literally... Well, for example, I was going to plant some blueberry bushes, and when I walked in, I said, Michael, I'd like to get some blueberry bushes. He says, do you have your beds ready? I said, what do you mean? He goes, well, let Pierre go out there and show you what the beds look like, and if you have them ready, I'll sell you the blueberry plants. So I went out, and I did not have my beds ready. They have to be high in organic matter, sort of raised mulch. He had a lot of leaf mulch there. So Michael was saying, well, Pat, you know, I really don't want to sell you these plants, because you might as well do a blueberry graveyard if you don't have your beds ready yet. So I said, thanks, Michael. So that's the kind of thing, and that's the way he treats his customers. I mean, he just lets you know what will work and what won't, and it's absolutely wonderful. Yeah, I got a ginkgo tree from him up there, and otherwise I would have had to go mail order. Ginkgo's, of course, good for mental function, and I also got a persimmon that is unlike any persimmon I've ever had. It's just amazingly sweet. That one of the things that's nice is when you go up there, if it's in season, you can sample the fruit right off the tree. And the other thing he had was a mango pawpaw. A mango pawpaw that really did taste like a mango. It was absolutely delicious up there. So Michael McConaughey of Edible Landscapes, they're doing a pruning workshop this weekend. It's from 1 to 2. I plan to go up there, 1 to 3, up in Afton, Virginia. And if you can't find them, just Google ediblelandscapes.com. So this is the time of the year to be pruning, of course, when the sap isn't running and the leaves are when the plants are dormant. And there's such an art, and of course each different kind of vine or tree, depending on where you want to go, you prune thinking 3 or 4 years ahead. So I'm way behind in my pruning, and I know my orchard is showing it here a little bit. So that's coming up. He will be on the Michael will be on the third Tuesday of every month. And, of course, then we've got Steve Pope. He was here first time last Tuesday, but he'll be here on the first Tuesdays of each month. Okay. Chicken Whisperer. Whisperer, I see you in the chat room. Are you back with us here? Andy? Are people hearing me okay? He at least is online. Okay. he's online with a song. Okay, Andy, never mind. I can see why you're being a little distracted here. So today what we've got, it's the, where are we here? It's the 9th, December 9th, so it's the second Thursday. And today we have on... Richard Frudenberger. Richard will be talking about raw milk, and okay, good, I'm coming through fine, okay. Very good. With respect to chickens in the news, let me pull up my notes on this. There were quite a few. Let's see. Oh, yeah! Oh, good, he's back.
Na, 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 na.
You're just messing with me, aren't you, Whisper?
Yes, let me get a sound check from everybody. Hey, you know, it's funny.
Oh, that
funny.
Sounds much better.
I was just telling Jen the other day, we've had really good luck and success. I guess I jinxed us with really the radio broadcast lately being nice and clear. Even when we were on the road at the Ohio National, we were blessed with awesome sound and video for the majority of that two-hour show, which was phenomenal. And so I guess today I just had to do a little bit more work on the system and reboot this, reboot that, open this, flip a switch, and away we go. So thank you very much for bearing with us. I know Pat's keeping you entertained, and but yes, now everybody's saying they can hear me absolutely wonderful. I don't know if that's a good or bad thing, but we can away we
well,
go.
Well, now wait a minute, Whisper. Hey, Whisper, it's a good thing, but what's going on with this thong thing in the chat room?
Somebody had I was deep. Actually, what I did was in the last, I don't know how long was I gone, about 4 minutes, I ran up here to the Best Buy, bought a brand new computer, came back and set it up. You know, computers these days are disposable, so I just ran up to the store, got one, brought it back and hooked up three plugs, and hey, we're live. So but yeah, somebody in there said, where's the video? Where's the video? And I was like, hey, one thing at a time here. You know, I got to get sound first. And then somebody said in the chat room, we were tired of seeing CW naked all the time, so he decided to just not do the video any longer. But that's not the case.
Right. Now, this says, I think you said, I can't let this go, Whisper. It says, I'm quoting you, at least has a thong on. Thing, and then you said thong.
Yes. The cold fingers this morning were
closely. But I am
hey,
curious.
Said
I can't stand it.
They said I was naked. I had to set the record straight.
Okay, well, that explains no video then. Thank you, I think, for that.
Woo!
Oh, dear. Is it Friday yet? It's not quite Friday, is it?
Not quite Friday yet. I'm scared to see what tomorrow brings us, but we've almost made it through a long work week together, so tomorrow we'll be saying we made it through another work week together, we hope, if we all return here. If I wake up tomorrow and I'm not seeing dirt, then it'll be a great day.
Well, I got to tell you, speaking of dirt, I rewatched the video Dirt last night, and everybody has got to watch it. It is absolutely phenomenal, and it will certainly change your perspective of compost and dirt and the value it is to our souls, essentially. I mean, without our dirt, we can't have it. So if you wake up tomorrow morning seeing dirt, and it's good, healthy living dirt, Whisper, you are indeed blessed. So Dirt, the movie, folks, you can get on Netflix, and you can get it from Crossroads, wherever. Highly recommended. So, Whisper, I hope you see Dirt tomorrow.
No, I don't want to see Dirt when I wake up. I love my life. So,
yeah, I do,
no,
too.
Very cool.
Okay.
So where did I interrupt you? You were looking for something, researching something. How much did you talk about Margie? Hopefully we can have her on tomorrow. Today we're talking all about raw milk.
Yep, she said she might be able to be on tomorrow, and of course Richard's going to talk about milk today.
Yes.
which is a really hot topic. I mean, it's almost a conspiracy in some people's eyes, and it's a problem in other people's eyes. So raw milk, I know my pets love it. I'll just say that. So anyway, and then I was just going to go with a little bit of chickens in the news. This is a little snippet that I found so interesting, and we've talked about similar topics before, but this is says wasted food equals loss of energy, and it says the equivalent of 350 million barrels of oil every year. 350 million barrels of oil—it's about 2% of our total energy consumption. Could be saved if Americans wasted less food. And this is from the University of Texas at Austin, and they say about 1.4 billion, with a B, barrels of oil are used to produce, package, prepare, preserve, and transport a year's worth of food in the U.S. And Americans waste about a third, as we've talked about before, of their food. And most of the food wasted includes the fats and the oils. But it's all across the board. So all that is to say, if you really value this planet and to realize that so much of our food is oil-based, based, unless you buy it locally from local farmers. That of course they need some oil to produce it as well. But let's think more about what really is waste and take all that food that we don't eat anyway, and at least compost it for heaven's sakes, so that we can grow topsoil and food locally. So that's the main news I've got. I've got a couple little minor ones here, but what do you have, Whisper?
I've got a really cool one that comes to us from newstimes.com. Great story. 10-year-old asks for chicken coop for Christmas. 10-year-old asks for chicken coop for Christmas. So what we have here is that Jack, Butchler, 10, of Newtown, reads as much as he can about raising chickens. Jack is saving up for his own chicken coop and thinks he'll have enough money to buy it by the spring. So let me read this article to you from Newtown. All Jack Butchler wants for Christmas is a gift card to Benedict's Home and Garden. He would like a chicken coop, and he has his eye on the deluxe model, a $1,200 setup that can hold 10 to 12 chickens. The Reed Elementary School student asked his mother if he could raise chickens, and she told him he could if he raised enough money for a coop. He raised some money with a lemonade stand. He also sowed vegetables from his mother's garden at the end of the road during the summer. So far, he's raised about $200. His mother, Pam Butchler, has reined in his plans a little. She thinks the $500 model coop that holds 4 to 5 chickens is more practical, but otherwise she's fully supportive. Jack wants to be an organic heirloom farmer when he grows up, and he wants to rear all sorts of animals, including cows and pigs. But he decided chickens are enough for now because they are among the cheapest livestock available. Also, he loves eggs. I eat eggs every morning, he said. I like eggs because they're round, and inside their hard shells, they are liquidy. Sounds like a good thing for a 10-year-old to describe an egg. His mother is a caterer and a chef, and he's learned a few culinary skills from her. He can make an excellent frittata, he said, usually with pepper, sausage, and spinach. One day he hopes to raise ducks and quail so he can get their eggs too. The family lives on 4.5 acres of property on Eden Hill Road. He'd turn our whole backyard into a farm if he could, his mom said. We're very proud of his determination, and it really is all him. Some people just know at a very young age what they want to do. I'll be very surprised if he says he wants to be a banker. Jack hopes to have enough money saved by spring to buy this $1,200 coop. It will raise his responsibility to clean and feed the birds, but he's ready. He has a few books on raising chickens, and he's read them cover to cover. Whenever we go to Borders, he goes straight for the agriculture section, she said. Jack goes to farmers markets with his mom, gets advice from other farmers. He also met a seed lady who convinced him to try growing some heirloom vegetables next season. Jack has helped his mother garden as long as he can remember, but this year he's going to try his hand at heirloom vegetables on his own. He has already collected some seed packets, and varieties include cucumber, lemon, and Chinese red noodles. The vegetables are going to be a bigger crop than the eggs, she said. It's a lot of hard work, but it pays off because my family and I will be eating food that is fresher, and when it's organic, you don't use pesticides or anything. Jack likes vegetables. He's never eaten a cheese curl. He went to McDonald's once, but threw up soon afterward.
Yes.
I'm not a nut job. Don't you love it? She says, I'm not a nut job. I've never told my kids they can't go to McDonald's, but I've tried to give them some sense of reality about food. So congratulations there, Jack. I hope you get your $1,200 chicken coop this spring. Work hard, earn it, and then it'll reward you for many years to come with awesome, awesome chickens and beautiful, beautiful eggs. So how cool is that? So I love that story. I just love it to death.
That's a wonderful story. I mean, that's one to sort of promote in schools. They ought to write an essay on, have it read on soapbox radio, saying, you know, kids can make a difference, and certainly knowing about the foods that way is so important. Oh, my gosh, it's so important. Good story,
Whisper. Thank you. One more really quick that's not so, happy and cheerful. And we reported on this several weeks ago, but this is just a follow-up. I want to try to keep you maintained because a lot of people are like, I wonder what happened to that story the CW talked about. So here's a follow-up. Watertown 4-H family must give up chickens, health director says. Watertown 4-H family Must Give Up Chickens, Health Director Says, by Sarah Thomas, Town Correspondent. Watertown health officials said today that complaints from neighbors and violations to the town's regulations were behind a November 29th decision not to allow John and Laura McKenzie, proprietors of the town's only 4-H club, to keep chickens on their property. I've been crying my eyes out, and half of our club members have quit while we've been fighting this, Laura McKenzie said in an interview last week. Yep. I've had many of them. I've had many of them since they were just chicks. Steve Ward, director of the town's health department. Steve Ward, director of the town's health department, said that chickens are considered farm animals by the town, and keeping them requires satisfying a number of different regulations. We had a number of concerns, mainly with how close the chickens were kept to the property line, Ward says. Between the documented complaints and the offset violations, we decided against the permit. The club has been fighting to save its animals for months. McKenzie, a professional poet, said she had already given a number of the club's rabbits and chickens away and had spent hundreds of dollars on, ready for this, spent hundreds of dollars on evacuation plans, compost bins, lighting, and other measures to be able to keep the town's permitting requirements. We kept the chickens in a very sanitary coop, she said. Many of our neighbors didn't even know they were there. However, Ward said a recent visit by Crystal Bennett, the town's environmental control officer, showed a noticeable chicken waste odor, another factor she said contributed to the decision. The McKenzies have retained the services of a lawyer, Steve Winnick, who has argued that the property should be protected from zoning regulations under the Dover Amendment. The amendment, however, has no effect on the health department's decision. The McKenzies still have 8 rabbits, Ward said, that the McKenzies would need to file another permit. Money, 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 money. It's all they care about is money. File another permit application to keep the rabbits, which would prove they would be kept in a special climate-controlled enclosure in the couple's detached garage. Do people have to keep stinky little babies in a detached garage in a heating and controlled environment? I hear a lot of people complain about stinky diapers. Maybe we ought to make sure that we keep all of our little babies out in detached garages because they could stink too. I wonder if she's ever walked into a daycare and sniffed around. Have you ever walked into a daycare? How about a nursing home? Maybe we need to ban nursing homes and daycares because they have an odor. Have you ever walked down a city street? City streets have a unique odor as well. Maybe we just need to ban cities altogether. Because there's an odor coming from the city. Okay, farms have an odor, people have an odor, chickens have an odor, dogs and cats have an odor, everything has an odor. Nursing homes have an odor, daycares have an odor. Do we need to go ahead and cancel and eliminate and make all of those illegal? You know, walk down a city street, you smell city, you smell sewer. Are we going to ban cities now? I think we should. So it's just it's absolutely a really moot point. You walk out, man. I'm telling you, and the honest truth, the day is long. When I walk outside in the morning and let my dogs out and they do their business, let me tell you, it smells 10 times worse than no odor coming from my chicken pens. It's absolutely amazing. But dogs, for some reason, are allowed all over the planet. You can have up to like 8 wherever you live, and you can have them the size of Great Danes that have poop larger than human poop. So anyway,
yeah.
Just absolutely
incredible. Well, don't forget to whisper that statistic that is true. I mean, here's one of those facts that we talk about all year long. One 40-pound dog makes more manure than 10 chickens. One 40-pound dog will poop about 3/4 of a pound a day. 10 chickens make about 2/3 of a pound. So it's just crazy.
Hey, totally. And don't forget, the city of Longmont, Colorado, same arguments before they allow chickens. Everybody was going around, wah, 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 what about this, what about that, what about this, what about that. And then 2 years later, as the experiment, as the trial allowance of chickens comes to an end, and they look at making it a permanent rule to keep chickens in Longmont, well, guess what? No complaints. They said it was a non-issue. We didn't hear anything or have any type of complaints about all this warning, the sky's falling, people want chickens. None of that. It was amazing. And they count the complaints with dogs and cats and loud music and loud mufflers and boom boom stereos and cars and wives yelling at their husbands and all this other stuff. And chickens came like zero. It was amazing. So here are the officials using their own documentation. We've told people that for years. If you know, get what you can from city council, even if it's only four chickens, and then go back a year or two later, use their own documentation, their own information against them, and say, look, why won't you let us have six or eight? Well, okay, tell me why. How many complaints do we have over the last 2 years? Any stink? Any of this? Any of that? Do we have a huge chickens roaming free problem? Do we now have a cow and a rat a problem like you claim? Do we have a goat and a pig problem? Because now that we allow chickens, we have to allow pigs and goats and cows. Show me a city across America that now has a cow problem because they allow chickens in their town. So it's just one of those things that you are correct. It's all this moot point. And it's so shame on you guys for not allowing, especially something as good as 4-H, be in your town. It's just absolutely ridiculous. So that's my little soapbox for today, which we hear just about every other day when we talk about this stuff. So, hey, it's about half past the hour, which gives us about 50 minutes or so left to talk about raw milk, the good, the bad, and the ugly. This is a movement that's also sweeping nationwide. You've got people fighting all over the country to make raw milk legal. You've got investigators coming in with guns drawn, confiscating raw milk, making them pour it out, gallons and gallons and gallons. You can buy raw milk in South Carolina legally, already inspected. You drive it across into Georgia, they make you pour it out. You can't resell it over here. You can't even get a group of people to buy, give you, you know, let's say you get over there and people get, you know, somebody gives you, you know, $300 to go buy, you know, 40 gallons of raw milk. You go over there and buy it, bring it out over here. If they catch you, they're going to pour it out. It's on YouTube. It happened right up here in Athens, Georgia. Absolutely insane. So we're going to talk a little bit about that, the good and the bad and the ugly about raw milk, with Richard Frudenberger, publisher of Back Home Magazine, when we return after this short commercial break. Stay with us, folks. Raw milk's coming up next. Looking for something? Find it online at Bidbird Auctions. Bidbird.com is an online auction service that caters specifically to the poultry, waterfowl, game bird, and pigeon hobbyists. With so many rare and exciting species listed daily and in a wide variety of categories, you'll want to visit often. Join hundreds of the nation's top breeders that have made Bidbird Auctions their new home. And get sold on Bidbird. Ideal Poultry has been a family-owned and operated business since 1937. Their business is built on customer service and quality poultry, from rare white and brown egg layers to broilers, ducks, turkeys, and bantams. Ideal Poultry is the largest supplier of backyard poultry in the United States, shipping close to 5 million chicks annually. Visit them online at idealpoultry.com. That's idealpoultry.com.
ManaPro understands that poultry owners are as diverse as the birds they care for, which is why they offer both medicated and non-medicated starters. Whichever product you choose, you know you're getting great nutrition for your new chick. Look for ManaPro products at a retailer near you. ManaPro, nurturing life.
It's easy and rewarding to keep backyard chickens, and My Pet Chicken can supply everything you need to get started, including baby chicks, chicken coops, accessories, books, and free how-to information, plus fun gifts and rooster decor. At My Pet Chicken, you can buy as few as 3 baby chicks. They also sell fertile hatching eggs. Visit them online at mypetchicken.com. That's mypetchicken.com.
Pictures of chickens on aprons are common across America, but picture a chicken wearing an apron and you'll probably get a good chuckle. Laugh if you must, but nothing protects hens better than the Hen Saver Hen Apron. Hen Saver Hen Aprons protect your hens from the damage caused by an overly affectionate rooster and may even provide protection from an unexpected hawk attack. Hen Savers come in several different sizes to fit both bantam and standard-sized hens and roosters. Colors include camo, denim, navy, brown, khaki or black, and soon pink. Crazy K Farm is expanding its already colorful Hen Saver collection to include the color pink. A portion of their sales will be donated to organizations that fund breast cancer research and awareness. Order your Hen Saver aprons today at hensaver.com. That's hensaver.com.
Actually, in reality, I am Super Chicken.
Alrighty, thanks very much for staying with us today on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. Just a little quick reminder, maybe Love for Poultry, if she's there at her computer, can go ahead and post the link so you can nominate yours truly, the Chicken Whisperer, to co-host live with Regis and Kelly. The deadline is tomorrow. So I'll be posting it again on my Facebook page a little later today, and then maybe once or twice tomorrow, but the deadline is tomorrow. They will not take nominations longer than tomorrow. So please, if you haven't already, click on that link and take just, you know, 3-4 minutes of your time, because already I know that thousands of people have done this, and hundreds anyway, and it's going to be absolutely amazing if we can at least get in the top 10. I saw yesterday that they're going to have you can vote for your top, one of your top 10, I think in January, I think between January 10th, January 16th, something like that, they will have the finalists, the top 10 finalists. Who knows, may get picked, may not get picked, but either way, the people at Regis and Kelly and ABC are going to know about the Chicken Whisperer thanks to all of you nominating me to co-host with Kelly. They're looking for Men of Radio co-host nominations, and so we would hope you would do that. I would do it for you. Take 5 minutes and do that for me. All righty, it's now time to bring on Richard Frutenberger, publisher and technical writer with Back Home Magazine. You can visit them online, backhomemagazine.com, and we're going to be talking all about raw milk, the good, the bad, and the ugly. Welcome to the show, Richard. Good to have you back.
Yeah, thanks a lot. We'll first entry in December, and it's a cold one up here. I don't know how it is in Georgia, but it sure has been cold here.
It was about 20 last night.
Well, I think we were at 14 or 16, but I know we had some comments on the how are you taking care of your chickens in those temperatures. But
we did. And you know what my comment is? I said my comment is, in fact, I said it on Facebook this morning and on my personal page. I said, hey, guess what? It got down to 20 in Georgia last night. Guess what I did special for my chickens? And then in all caps I put, nothing. nothing. I said, let me start the list by saying nothing. It's so funny. In fact, I've got – and I practice what I preach, and we explained this yesterday. I even have a lone bantam that doesn't get along with anybody. Nobody gets along with her. So she just has free range of the whole backyard, does whatever she wants to. No coop, no nothing. And she is my experiment this week. It's supposed to get down in the low teens, I think, on Monday. And she finds places to roost all by herself, no other chickens to cuddle with. And one day it's on the tractor, on the axle of the tractor. One day it's on up on the well, the imitation kind of wood well. One day it's on the strawberry pod or whatever the case may be. And every night I check on her to see where she's at and walk out every morning, and there she is, still alive. Imagine that. So I've even got four Saramas, tiny little birds, in a little chicken tractor, 3-foot by 4-foot, no heat, no lamp, no lights, no nothing. Four little Saramas, that's all I have in there. No big poofy mamas to keep them warm. And guess what? Yep, they're still alive. Imagine that. So doing all fine and dandy. I don't do anything, never have in 10 years, getting down to 13, 10, 12 degrees. I tell folks that some of you have heard this story. It's easy to remember because the number stays the same. I had 13-week-old Isa Browns. It got down to 13 degrees. Guess what I did? 2 fistfuls of hay in their plastic Walmart doghouse, and they were fine. So, but there were 13 of them, and so people say, well, there were 13, and they could cuddle and stay warm. That is true. That is a fact. That's why I'm having little broody mama all winter stay out by herself, roost by herself, and do nothing, just so I can tell folks now, after this year, yes, I had a little bantam, broody mama we call her, out in the middle of winter all along. No shelter, no special coop, no heat, no nothing, and guess what? She's still alive to lay another day! So so I just, you know, practice what I preach just to share that with people. I understand the ultimate comment is, but I'll feel better if they're heated in the coop at night. Fine. I can't argue with that. Go ahead and put a heater out there if it makes you feel better. No big deal. I'm just saying I don't do a doggone thing. So, and that's my 2 cents worth, and I'm sticking to it.
Well, that's about it. Right. I mean, I, you know, I, my opinion is if you baby them too much, they don't get hardy, and you don't want unhardy birds. And the other thing here is I don't really have any Mediterranean breeds, so, you know, they're pretty hardy anyway. So that's exactly what I say, is just leave them alone.
There you go. There you go.
Okay.
Let's talk about raw milk. Very controversial, and I've got my pen and paper out. I'm ready to learn. Ready to learn.
Yeah.
Well, gentlemen, wait a minute. I can't. There are times in these northern climates when the chickens need a little more shelter than just being left alone. So I don't want to leave the wrong impression with our listeners. I mean, I think they're good down to the teens, but after that, the frostbite and certainly can set in, and if they get cold or in a moist area, they'll get chilled, and that can kill them. So for the most part, what you were saying, where you live in North Carolina and Atlanta, Georgia, is true, but that's not universally true around the world. I just had to say that.
That's fine, and I will follow that up with saying when it's 40 below and you have toast in your hands looking out the window, what's the first thing you see? Tiny little birds flying around looking for food at 40 below. They don't have a heat lamp in that tree.
Well, that's true, but some breeds are more tolerant than others. So you just gotta. I've never seen my chickens flying around in a tree, but I have seen them looking absolutely miserable, how hunkered down out there, looking like with that look that, you know, I feel like crap kind of look, and you know it's not good for their health. So sometimes when it does get that cold and that down, I'll keep them in the coop rather than just let them go flying around in trees and. So anyway, there is a little bit of a difference there. I had to go on record for that.
I agree. You have to, you know, especially if you have chickens with large combs, that can be an issue with the frostbite.
And of course,
their
feet. If they can't get those feathers down over their feet at night, they can suffer some pretty bad frostbite. But what does this have to do with raw milk? Sort of nothing. Why don't we get back on the topic? Because this is one of my favorite topics, Richard. I think you picked a great topic
for
today.
I love it. I'm excited about it. Let's roll.
Okay. Well, you know, I'm not an expert by any means. In fact, I really just became aware of it only because of I go to a lot of trade shows. You know, a lot of conferences, workshops, trade shows, events and things like that all over the country. And any of them that are agricultural in nature, which are quite a few, or sometimes we got sustainable living shows, and that involves, you know, renewable energy and some green building and small-scale farming and growing and organic gardening and that kind of thing. So every time we got anything to do with agriculture, there always seems to be a group that is advocating raw milk. And I, you know, it really didn't click with me until I started to talk to them. And this is not just, you know, some parts of the country. I mean, I'm Colorado, out west and Pennsylvania and, just other places. They're usually nonprofits or local or state advocates that just really want to promote the use of raw milk. And why are they doing this? Well, because the federal government does not allow the interstate commerce or sale of raw milk, of unpasteurized milk. In 1987, from what I understand, the FDA issued a regulation that essentially said that it prohibits the introduction into interstate commerce, in other words, crossing a state line from one state into another, interstate commerce of a final packaged product that is not pasteurized, that is intended for human consumption. So that was 1987. And in 1991, the Canadian government followed up with essentially the same thing. Pasteurization is mandatory in Canada since 1991. So, you know, all this individual effort towards raw milk is then really reduced as far as any kind of marketing goes. Now, why should we care? Well, that depends on who you talk to, obviously. On one side of the fence, there are the raw milk advocates. There's a lot of different groups, a lot of different local groups, and a lot of several national groups. But I guess two of them would be rawmilk.org and realmilk.com. These are websites that represent advocates of raw milk products throughout the country, and they're obviously in support of raw milk. And then all you have to do is go to the FDA website and look around for milk products in there, and you'll find the arguments against the sale of raw milk. And the same with in Canada. The in Canada, it tends to be more individual provinces instead of a federal. I actually haven't read the federal wording on it, but the each individual province, like Saskatchewan, Ontario, Manitoba, British Columbia, whatever, they have their individual statements and positions on the sale of raw milk, which is pretty strict. And I guess, you know, why is that? Well, it's really mainly a health concern. It essentially boils down to if the production facility is not really clean. And so anyone who does home brewing or winemaking understands how bacteria can really have an effect, even a small amount, even in what appears to be a clean vessel, a small amount of bacteria can really, really have some dire effects on the final product, including, turning alcohol, fermented alcohol to vinegar, wine to vinegar, before it even gets to the point of, getting very far in the process. Well, the same thing with the milk products. The bacteria present from a variety of sources can really cause some illness in people. So instead of dealing more stringently with the production end of it, they just figure we'll take care of it in the pasteurization process. And the pasteurization process just essentially kills the bacteria in the bud, and then the milk can be packaged and sold safely according to the FDA and the Canadian agricultural directors there, and so we have no problem then.
Do you have any idea? Because I couldn't tell you right now to save my life. What year did we start this process of making everything, at least our milk, pasteurized? When did that really start? You know, what 1900, 1800, 1700, and then two, do we have any numbers of even before we started the pasteurization process, how many died of raw milk poisoning, if you want to call it that, before we started doing the pasteurization?
Okay, I can partially answer the first question, and I can give you a sectional answer or a portion of a term on the second one. The only thing I know about the, I don't know what year that we came to, the U.S. anyway, became to generally pasteurizing the milk. I believe it probably would have been, I can't give you a year, but I can probably tell you it is when the larger companies started to ship it, you know, out beyond their local regions. I mean, when we started bottling things and shipping it long distances, you know, like beer, again, and getting back to beer, every little town and small city had a brewery at one time, even in the U.S. I mean, it was very common to go, Brooklyn or some, maybe not a village, but a sizable town or a small city. They all had breweries because beer is heavy and it cost a lot of money to ship it too far. So somehow by marketing this stuff and raising the price of the product through extensive marketing and through however they do it, it became, and also the cost of production comes down as the scale of economic scale increases. So with the with the manufacturing of beer in this case to a level of which was fairly inexpensive in very large volumes, they could afford to package it and probably knock out the competition at the same time, and then start shipping it further and further afield, and to which point you got some of the huge breweries we have today where we're shipping it all over the country, even though it is heavy, but they do have their regional manufacturers. Same with milk. I mean, it's a heavy product. It's liquid is heavy. It has to be shipped, but they do have central locations where they ship it from. But I think that we only started processing pasteurization in process, not just in milk, but in things like wine and other beverages. We only started that around 1890 or about the turn of the century, really 1890 in the very late 1800s, early 20th century, when, if you'll also notice, when things started to get sanitized. I mean, when products started to be advertised as, especially into the 20s, as things, as post-World War One, when things started to be good because they were quote-unquote clean, you know, eggs, white eggs are better than brown eggs, you know, that kind of thing. That's the timeline I can look at. I mean, Louis Pasteur only invented his pasteurization process, came to fruition in 1862, I think, and that was for alcohol, the beverage, you know, for wine and other low alcohol content beverages. So the you know, essentially we say the turn of the century for milk, but you know, to what extent it progressed from you know, from one state or two states on to most of the states, I don't know. I do know that 28 of the 50 states still allow raw milk consumption. Now, it doesn't mean, that does not include sale of, that just means consumption. In other words, you can I don't know how many actually allow sale and how many, you know, how to split that out, but 28 states do allow the consumption of raw milk. In Canada, there is no consumption of raw milk. Since 1991, there just is none. I mean, as far as they can control. I mean, I'm sure there are people who do it, but it's not a common thing. So that's the first question. The second question was, and I'm going to have to look this up. I had some notes on this actually in the 90s, I believe. Let me see. There was from 1998 to 2005. There were 45 outbreaks of foodborne illness. This is just illness that involved either unpasteurized milk or cheese made from unpasteurized milk. So that's 45.
Richard,
only 45
what kind
outbreaks.
Of illness was that?
What kind of what?
What was the illness that it caused?
They just generally described as foodborne illness.
Foodborne illness. Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And this was taken from a study report from the Centers for Disease Control. The CDCs, okay, so that's a federal agency. 45 out of the entire universe, which I don't, you know, I don't know what that number is, but that was 7 years, okay. So let me see. The outbreaks accounted for a little over 1,000 illnesses, 1,007 illnesses. 104 hospitalizations and only 2 deaths. So for that whole period, there's only 2 deaths in that whole range. So that's the point is that 0 deaths is the goal. I mean, even 1 death is too much. So these are the numbers they're going by, and the pasteurization argument, as far as pro pasteurization, is that any even one preventable death is worth the pasteurization issue. So, you know, these numbers, the numbers don't lie, but I mean, you really have to step back and look at the actual situation. And, you know, one of the things that, you know, the people at the little local groups like to talk about is that farmers, you know, dairy farmers who actually drink quite a bit of raw milk themselves, they were raised on it, and they don't, it's almost like water in foreign countries. You know, you may get sick when you come from the U.S. and go to wherever and drink the water raw. You may get a stomach ache. You may have some dysentery problems, whatever. If you had been raised drinking that water, you develop agents in your own body against. Actually, you develop good bacteria to help fight the bad bacteria, and you don't get sick. So these farmers will drink their own milk, and they have been drinking their own dairy milk, and they've never really had any issues. The funny thing is, some of them won't drink anybody else's dairy milk. In other words, they won't go to the neighbor and drink their milk. They only drink their own milk because they know that, you know, they have been acclimated to their own raw product, and that's pretty much what they stick with. So that could be, you know, that could be some issue. I also think that the act of really keeping the equipment clean is really the main point. If the equipment, the stainless steel is clean, the inspection or no inspection, if the dairy people would keep everything clean and get into more of a slow, instead of a high volume milk production, you know, more of a slow, cleaner production, they'd probably be a lot better off. But the whole point has been resolved by just forcing pasteurization. And it's funny, in the Canadian model, Actually, some of the argument came up that, it, you know, they have universal health care. In other words, the government has to pay for health care. It's actually
right.
a heck of a lot. It's a heck of a lot cheaper to pasteurize the milk than it is to send out so many inspectors and do so many inspections of every single farm, you know, every day or every week or whatever it may have to be, and fine everybody if they're not keeping everything clean. It's a lot. It's just a lot cheaper to do the pasteurization than it is to inspect everything thoroughly. So that's almost the bottom line, really. In that, at least in that country, it's just a matter of economics.
Huh.
You understand what I'm saying there? It's really just, you know, at the end of the day, it's just a lot cheaper to, you know, sterilize the milk than it is to you know, take care of the illness. And that's really not the issue, because later we'll, you know, talk a little bit about the benefits of raw milk. And I guess I did say something here I shouldn't have. Pasteurization is not sterilization. That's a very important point. I shouldn't have referred to that. Pasteurization is an entirely different process. There's a couple of different ways to pasteurize, but the temperatures involved are a lot different, a lot lower in pasteurization than they are in sterilization. Sterilization involves a 250-degree heat for 15 minutes, or at a much higher temperature, at about 275 or 273, briefly, that will sterilize the milk. But in pasteurization, we're talking about a much lower temperature being held for only about 2 or 3 minutes, and not going over 185 degrees Fahrenheit, because that will burn it. And in burning it, it means killing some of the enzymes and some of the other necessary to many, in many people's opinion, necessary nutrients that are in the milk. Through overheating it, you're destroying some of the best benefits of the raw milk to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, you know, that's really the key. That's the crux of the argument, is why are you forcing us to drink an inferior product when we have available a much better one in its raw form? And that's really the bottom line.
Well, that is the whole issue. I mean, there have been studies done comparing raw milk versus processed milk. There was a very famous one done by Dr. Francis Potter. This was in the 40s, and because we can't do these kind of studies necessarily on kids, he used kittens. And what he did is he fed one group of cats a diet of raw milk, raw meat, and cod liver oil, and this is from the Weston Price Foundation's website, and the other groups were given that the other groups had pasteurized milk, evaporated milk, or sweetened condensed milk instead of the raw milk. So you had four groups, and the results were so astounding that, and he did it transgenerational, which is even more interesting. The ones that ate the raw milk and the raw meat did really good. They not only lived long lives, but they were pretty free of degenerative diseases. But the cats with the pasteurized milk suffered from the acute illnesses such as vomiting and diarrhea, and they succumbed to every other degenerative disease that we now have in our population, you know, arthritis, allergies, all those degenerative diseases. So even though they were still getting the raw meat, they took this on to the third generation of Richard, and what was amazing about that is the third generation, the majority of the cats were infertile, and they exhibited antisocial behavior, and they say in short, they were acting just like modern Americans, and as we know, certainly the sperm count is going down in the generations from what it used to be, and they're saying a lot of this is due to the having to consume pasteurized and processed milk products. So, and it goes on. I mean, there are other studies, but this one is just so dramatic. It's the only one I found that actually took it out a generation or two out. I don't know about you guys, but when I was growing up, none of my classmates had allergies or asthma or even much of an obesity problem. And what they're doing here is relating our huge dairy consumption of processed dairy to a lot of these chronic diseases. So the stakes are remarkably high. And the other thing I've got to put in is I've been, when we lived in Vermont and certainly here, you know, big dairy farms, and we'd go and visit some of the dairy farms, and some of the larger farms, they would even cut the cow's tail so it wouldn't flop around to get to dirty the milk. So I think this gets into big scale production issues as well, when it comes to where they have to sanitize it just to keep the milk flowing in relatively filthy conditions. So I just had to add that in. Go ahead, Richard.
No, I fully agree. I mean, I think that, you know, we were even talking at the magazine yesterday about some of the dairy farms, you know, some of the factory farms, and the cows are just standing in feedlots up to their, you know, almost up to their teeth.
Oh, it's horrible.
In feces. I mean, it's just, of course it has to be sterilized after that, you know. But
that's right.
But, you know, I know that everybody understands, and I have no, there's no scientific evidence that I am aware of, but I know that a small-scale, family-run operation is going to be a lot. People are going to be a lot more careful. Both the employees and the employees are more than likely to be family anyway. But even if there are hired employees, they are going to be much more likely to keep the equipment clean, to keep their feedlots. I mean, clean. They probably wouldn't even have feedlots, but they, you know, obviously grass-fed cattle and any of the smaller scale operations are going to be just inherently cleaner and more effective in the sense of health and well-being of the animal than the larger ones because they just don't have the money to be calling the vet all the time, replacing cattle that's died, all that kind of thing. I mean, when it's a big business, you build that into the spreadsheets as part of the business plan. You lose a certain percentage, you replace them quickly and so on and so forth. You don't really care about, you know, how clean it is. You just really care about are we not losing too many. And the way we don't lose too many is just pump them full of antibiotics. With a smaller operation, especially an organic or even just a local operation where they're really trying to avoid using as many chemicals as possible, it's just a whole different story. They're not out for ultimate production. They're out for a good balance between production, health, well-being, and a different lifestyle, essentially, and that's, you know, that's what they're aiming for. So I think that is a major point that, you know, a lot of these studies do not really look at those smaller farms. I mean, they're looking at larger operation taking milk from essentially factory situations and studying it. And one other thing that I think is pointed out in one of the things I read was that it really depends on when that milk was tested. You know, they make these chemical analysis a lot, and it really depends on at what point in the cow's birth cycle the milk was taken for sampling. I mean, it is, you know, there's a difference even in humans. There's a difference between milk, you know, prior to birth and milk post birth. I mean, just the content, just the consistency mm-hmm. of the milk, consistency of it, and what's in it. You know, we all know it has calcium and riboflavin and protein and A and D and phosphorus and, you know, B12 and all the good stuff. But what we don't know a whole lot about is the enzymes, and that is where is number one, where all that good conversion is due to the enzymatic reaction and of these enzymes that we don't know a whole lot about. And also that's exactly what's getting destroyed with the heat. Is the enzymes, yeah, and the vitamins, you know, all that doesn't get affected as much. It's the enzymes, and that's where the power of the milk is. So, you know, that's really the issue.
Well, there's another factor too, Richard, that is so core to this whole issue, and that is how we're feeding cows in the commercial factory farms. Basically, they have this high protein feed that comes from soybeans, usually GMO soybeans. Chicken feathers, as we know, can be used to feed cows because of the high nitrogen content. And so what the bottom line is, this is from Weston Price again, that rarely is one truly allergic to grass-fed cow's milk. A lot of the allergies are coming, that people have allergies to dairy, are coming through probably the foodstuffs that are being the only food they can get is what they'll eat. But a lot of the foodstuffs isn't really what a cow is designed to eat. I mean, the cow is not designed to live off high corn diets. They don't have really the digestive system for it even. So.
Yeah, corn is absolutely the last thing that they would naturally have access to, you know, in the field. I mean, just we have done, you know, a tremendous disservice to the dairy industry by, you know, by feeding them, you know, in the feedlots the way we do feed them, and just not allowing them to have that pasture grazing. And you know, I know in your state in Virginia, there's several farmers I was just at a fairly large regional conference last weekend, December 4th and 5th. The Carolina Farm Stewardship Association has an annual conference and workshop meeting. And, there's a number of Virginia dairy farms that are, grass-fed, both beef cattle and dairy cattle. And Carolina is the same way. I mean, as you get into the mountains, it's a little different. The farms are smaller just because of the topography. But it's a big deal. And I know that the grass-fed cattle are, happier, more productive as far as a quality product. And of course, the people who manage these farms can get more for their product than the average farmer who's just stuffing corn down their throats.
Right. Yeah, there's cow shares that are available, at least in my county here, where you actually own the cow to get around the law. And you can, yeah.
Well, my question
is,
go
ahead.
There was 28 states that you said that raw milk's legal for, I think you said self-consumption, but you can't sell
raw, milk consumption, the way it's worded, and I unfortunately don't have the notes to break that out into sale and consumption, but the note I have here is 28 of the 50 states still allow raw milk consumption. Now, 28 of the 50 states, I don't believe, allow raw milk sale. That's the difference.
Okay.
I would be very surprised if all 28
and that's what,
consumption. You know, you can eat, you can drink your own raw milk, but you cannot sell your own raw milk, even within the state. I mean, but still, there are some who allow that. Like you said, South Carolina, it's okay.
Yeah, they get it inspected. You can buy it in the stores, raw milk, there it is. And some folks in Georgia got busted going over there buying it and bringing it back to their farmer's market here. Made them pour it all out. I was just concerned, it's if you have the cow out back and you're milking the cow, drinking it every morning, then, they can't, I guess, do anything about that. But I just was curious about what makes the 28 states different than the other states regarding that. It just kind of makes you go, there's all these comparables, back many, many moons ago when, yes, Pat, I was a little bit more liberal than I'm not now. Before I started, working in EMS and public safety, I did, honestly. These words came out of my mouth. I remember it plain as day. I would say, if somebody wants to smoke crack in the upstairs bedroom of their apartment, why not? Go ahead. Doesn't bother me none. Let them, whatever. Until I was the one that had to go and pick them up because they smoke crack, now have chest pain, and want me to help them. And then when I go to collect their insurance money, they don't have it, and you and I pay for this fool that's up in the bedroom smoking crack. And so that's when a lot of my theories and thoughts started to change a little bit. So on one hand, I'm thinking, okay, like you had mentioned earlier, Richard, about the price, the cost of medical. Somebody gets sick, and then we have to, take care of them, and the health care, and then that's going to cost more than just if we pasteurized everybody and the price of inspections and things like that. So that, I guess I can see that on one hand as far as, that – so I can kind of understand that based on let's just legalize this, and then all these people that OD, now we're paying for their health care when they do, and $1,000 ambulance ride. So it's part of me does understand that from my background, and where, if I'm going to do this, I'm going to do this, and I get my cow out of my backyard. If I get sick, I get sick. So, again, part of that is the
I'm not sure I follow your analogy, but I want to read a quote. You brought up a really interesting point about self-responsibility and about health care. Mm-hmm. And there was a book written by Frank Oski, O-S-K-I, and he's the current chairman of pediatrics at Johns Hopkins University, and he might be one of the most influential physicians in our country. He wrote a book called Don't Drink Your Milk. Now, this is something, of course, that's legal. He's talking about pasteurized milk. And he says that he pins just about every health problem, talk about millions of dollars of money, public money spent, about every health problem in children, he pins it on the consumption of processed milk. Everything from acute and chronic ear infections, and how many kids do we know that have those tubes now in their ear, to constipation, to asthma, to eczema, and it just goes on. And on. So now we're talking about you know, not we're talking about staying within the law, but then the law is making us eat stuff and drink stuff that isn't is going to cost the public billions and billions of dollars, not to mention the early onset diabetes that's also related to some of the processed milk products. So how do you feel about that when you start talking about about well, I don't know quite how that relates to crack, but it is certainly a self-responsibility. Don't we have a self-responsibility to our population to make really good quality healthy products?
I mean, the game has
no clothes here.
But, you know, I think daily it's funny because a lot of times, and like I said, I try to be as transparent as I can and practice what I preach. I really try hard to do that. There are times when I have a decision to make thinking, oh, I'll just stop into this fast food restaurant. No, because then I'll feel like tomorrow on the radio I have to say, guys, I hate to tell you this, but I stopped at McDonald's yesterday. So So the issue with that is also we talk about processed food. And so I can spout off all day long. Me and Jen try to buy as organic as we possibly can. But when I'm sitting in my kitchen and we talk about processed food, I look at my organic Annie's Bunnies, processed. I look at the organic canned ravioli, processed. I look at the organic cereals, processed. I look at the organic peanut butter cookies I have, processed. So I think about that. I'm like, okay, you know, this people talk about processed food and then here, you know, oh, well, I eat organic. Well, yeah, but it's still – it's the majority of it is all processed. I mean, last night, Ben and I had a frozen pizza. It was organic spinach and cheese pizza, but it's processed. So I'm right there with you. I was sitting there and thinking, hey, you know, I can toot the horn and say, hey, we order organic, but then when I look at what we're buying organic, it's still this processed, you know, cardboard or whatever it is, you know, that's processed. So where's that fine line? I completely agree. I was just saying, I was doing the comparison of, I kind of understand the fact that, well, we need to, you know, like Richard Fruenberger said, you know, their theory was that it would be cheaper for us to, but I don't think the numbers add up there either. If they only had a certain number of people, like you had mentioned, that even how many, 45 outbreaks, 1,000 people sick, how much, you know, let's play with the numbers and see if it weighed the difference there. So this is interesting. I just someone asked in the chat room if crack would have been legal, would it have been okay then? That's a very good point. You know, if crack is illegal, then I guess it wouldn't have been okay. But you and I wouldn't have had to pay his $1,000 ambulance ride and his multi-$1,000 health hospital bill.
We're paying that with these processed foods. I mean,
you pay now or pay later.
Exactly.
Yeah. That comment, Pat, I know you agree with. When people talk about buying fresh fruits and vegetables and food, it's like you either, you know, it's more expensive. We know that. So it's like you pay now or you pay later. I'm just as guilty. I'm telling you the truth. Many a days, and I haven't done it yet, I think about putting on my Facebook page, folks. This tells you a lot about my way of thinking. If I keel over from
Whisper? Lost you, I think.
You still here?
Oh, there you go. You're back.
I'm back, yeah. I heard it block. Is it all back on now?
I'm here. Whisper, are you here? I think we lost the whisper.
Okay, sorry. I got disconnected. It just went bloop, all of a sudden gone. But like I tell folks that I probably had – I mean, I had a horrible diet up until probably I was trying to think when I met Jen last – let's just say the last 9 years before then, I pretty much had a horrible diet. That was my choice to use that to stuff my face.
I think we lost him again, but
– I'm okay here.
Yeah, okay.
You can still hear me?
Well, you went away again, but then now you're back. What's the universe telling you here?
Yeah. Can you still hear me okay?
I've still got you, Andy. You're on.
Okay, good. So I feel like, you know, hey, if all of a sudden the chicken whisperer keels over with a massive heart attack, don't feel sorry for me. I made those decisions. I used that spoon too much growing up. I wasn't educated on it. I didn't really care about it until maybe the last 9 years. That's kind of my thing.
Ah, there's a comment in the chat room, which we lost you again. It says the government has shut off your phone, but then Andy Vader. Well, I think what you're getting at is self-responsibility, which is really a core. But when we've got a whole food system that is supplying food that is causing metabolic syndrome and diabetes in kids and all kinds of things, what is legal and what should the government take care of when we have all those diseases to pay for? I mean, if you keel over with a heart attack, of course, we'll all be praying for you, but we all choose our lifestyle, I guess is what you're saying.
Right.
And if people want to drink raw milk, well, then doggone it, they should be able to drink raw milk. So.
Right. I completely agree. I mean, look where the radio show goes every day. It's awesome and great debate and what, you know what? Can you still hear me?
Sort of.
Okay, I just want to make sure. My chat room just went down. Maybe the feds are cracking down on the Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer radio show.
It could be. You never know. Well, Richard, there's one. We've got about 10 minutes. Well, maybe 5 minutes. But I want to talk about BST. Did you have any comments or anything that you wanted to add to that about this raw milk debate?
No, I didn't really have anything on that.
What stimulating hormone?
Yeah, I didn't come across anything on that in here. What I did want to say before we left was that the with regard to pasteurization, one of the methods in pasteurization that's used in places, developing countries, and other places where there's no refrigeration that's readily available, one of the methodologies is to actually introduce a small amount of hydrogen peroxide to the milk, which gets internally catalyzed and actually produces a or gets oxidized. I mean, it produces a bacteria that inhibit the growth of negative bacteria. So once you've understood that, it is then really interesting to understand this next point, which in raw milk there is one enzyme called lactoperoxidase, and just for anybody, you know, I people maybe not realize, but I have made a lot of fuel alcohol. We've got a lot of enzymes involved in the conversion of sugars and starches to ethanol, which we use, you know, which I use for fuel. So anything with an ASE at the end is generally an enzyme. So you've got all these different enzymes that break down starches and compound sugars into simple sugars, and this is essentially what's going on here. It's an enzyme that's breaking down some bacteria, and essentially the natural enzyme in raw milk, which is lactoperoxidase, catalyzes the conversion of hydrogen peroxide to water. In other words, it converts the existing fluids in the milk to a hydrogen peroxide, which actually then helps to clean up the bad bacteria in the milk. So it already is a self-fulfilling process. Mm-hmm. They just leave it alone. You know, that's one point. And the other point I wanted to make, which sort of ties back into what the Whisperer was saying, is that, you know, we've all heard of the invisible hand of the marketplace. And as much as I hate to hear that when certain political groups say it, the point is if a local farmer, if we stuck with our local foods, and you're getting local foods from your local sources,
mm-hmm.
if a local farmer was not keeping his equipment clean, his or her equipment clean, was selling milk that made people sick, that farmer would either clean his act up or he'd be out of business. And that's a pretty regulatory process without even having to regulate it. I mean, that's pretty much, I don't want to buy this anymore. So, you know, when it comes down to the local scale, we have our own built-in controls. You know the guy. You know if Jones is selling, you know, bad milk, he's either gonna have to fix it or get out, you know. So we know that. When it's shipped from, you know, wherever it's shipped from, it's, you know, three states away and it's bad, then, you know, it's just a whole different thing. And then the government does step in, and they have to at that scale. But on a local scale, things are a whole lot different. And I think that's an important point that a lot of people don't always realize.
Yeah, to elaborate on that, which is what you were saying, is that if we did try to buy local. And the egg issue just what, a couple of 3 months ago, where they had millions and millions, if not billions, of eggs that were recalled with something like that. How many more people are going to get sick from mass production, mass shipping of the product versus, you may have 600,000 people get sick versus 6,000 if we're buying local and we have that local, we're only shipping so far out, and you have a lot less risk of the multitudes getting sick over something. So yeah, I agree. And it's I guess it's called, I have to use the bad word, I don't know if I should use capitalism or not, but if someone's producing bad milk, guess what? Nobody's going to go there to buy it. Just kind of like what you were saying just now too. If somebody has an outbreak or someone's getting sick off that milk, okay, see ya, I'm going to go buy over here. And then he's got to fix that problem, like you said, then try to gain his customers back and pay attention to that. Because if he doesn't produce good, clean milk, or there is an issue with his milk, then he's not going to be able to feed his kids, and he'll go out of business because we'll go elsewhere locally to buy our milk. So I think that can be an issue as well, to encourage people to produce a good product, because if they don't, people will go elsewhere and get it somewhere else where they know they can get it, where it's healthy and clean regarding that. So really interesting conversation today. We could go on and on and on and on, but again, we've got about 6 minutes left. I may try to give this gift certificate away today. I was going to save it till tomorrow for Fun Friday, but a real easy question, or an easier question today, and we can get that out from McMurray Hatchery. So and unless there's anything else you just feel like you need to share, Richard, we'll just say thank you and have you back. Let's see, in a couple of weeks, though, it's the 23rd. We haven't decided. Your schedule may not even allow you to come on the 23rd. I haven't even decided yet if, based on me and Pat's schedule, if we're going to be broadcasting the 23rd, but we'll definitely keep you know via email and phone call.
Okay, yeah, well, I'll probably be available if you do, and if you don't, okay, we'll talk to you again in January. But so everybody have a if I don't speak to you again, just have a good holiday, a good Christmas, and if I see you on the 23rd, we will, and if not, we'll speak to you in January.
Great. Thank you so much, Richard. That was really fascinating. Well done.
Okay, well, good deal. We'll talk to you again. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, what an awesome show. My switchboard says 4 minutes left, so what we're probably going to do, I'll just make the executive decision so we're not rushing it and we make sure everybody has a chance to call in. We will save the $25 McMurray Hatchery gift card for tomorrow's radio show. It will be Fun Friday. Tomorrow we'll be giving away some Happy Hen Treats from RandallBurkey.com. We'll have the Sunflower Sensation, the Mealworm Frenzy. We'll have this $25 gift card from McMurray Hatchery, and then we just might have some other prizes to give away as well.
Great. Whisper, are you still with us? I think the gremlins got you again. But
me, hello.
There you go. There you're back. We were saying in the chat room, the government got you again.
Probably.
Something's going
Wouldn't
on,
doubt
isn't
it?
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, well, I was going to say, I think we might even want to have a topic to continue on with this a little bit, perhaps, and to go into about the bovine growth hormone and just what are the pros and the cons of that, because that's still, in the U.S., a big issue, and it's certainly something that has been so controversial that has been science has covered up different kinds of results from the bovine growth hormone, and yet it's a basic fact of a lot of the commercial production. So I just had to put that in there because it's not a good thing in my book. Anyway, Whisper, are you here?
I'm here.
Okay, good.
I was outside, actually. I had to take a break. I went outside. I was setting up a 40,000 BTU heater to install in my coop for tonight.
You're gonna kill those chickens, Whisper. They'll have to be in their bathing suits and their thongs just to be able to stay cool enough.
Oh my goodness, I love it. Someone's saying rotisserie in the chat room. All righty, folks, we hope you enjoyed today's show. How awesome is that? I'm telling you, you've listened to the show long enough, you know the kind of content that Richard Frudenberger, publisher of Back Home Magazine, brings to this radio show. You can get that times 10 by subscribing to his publication, Back Home Magazine. It's very affordable, and it's I guess you'd say bi-monthly, every other month throughout the year. You'll get his. It's a pleasure to open the mailbox and see it there. Great reading. You can very educational. So if you like what you see and hear when he's here twice a month, then you're going to love his publication when it comes out every other month. So backhomemagazine.com. We'd love for you to let him know that the Chicken Whisperer radio show, you heard about it there, and you're subscribing because of that, so we get some feedback, because he does come on the show twice a month and shares all of his knowledge that he's gained over all of these years. So we want to thank Richard and Back Home Magazine for the opportunity to come on twice a month. And tomorrow is Fun Friday. If we're all here, we'll have made it through another long work week together. Again, we'll have lots of prizes to give away tomorrow, so we hope you'll join us here on Blog Talk Radio, same time. And again, I know you're getting tired of hearing it, but tomorrow's the last day. If you would, take 5 minutes of your time and go nominate the Chicken Whisperer to be co-host of the Live with Regis and Kelly. Really appreciate that. Don't ask for a lot, but if you can do that for me, I would appreciate it. Pat, it's all yours.
Yeah, well, really good show. Certainly, the raw milk issue is part of my position on we want to be able to feed ourselves what we want to feed ourselves, especially if it's considered healthy. And the raw milk, I think, has so many benefits to it. We want to thank Richard Frudenberger. He's the publisher and technical writer for Back Home Magazine. And you can check, subscribe to that magazine at 800-992-2546 or just go to backhomemagazine.com. Andy Schneider, thanks to you for bringing us all together. Without you, we wouldn't be here. And, of course, thanks to our chat room chickeneers and all our other listeners for clucking along with us here today. Blessings to all. Blessings to all of you so much. We love you so much, and may the flock be with you evermore. God bless everybody. Oh, yeah! Yeah! Oh.